urging terrorism and guerrilla. How long this probationary period will last is anyone's guess. Habash has been quoted as saying 6 months. No doubt it depends on the degree of progress being made, if any. Once convinced that Arafat is being stalled, or that real progress toward peace is unlikely or impossible, Arafat's efforts, the Palestinians can hardly be charged with impatience. The General Assembly of the United Nations, including the United States, voted for an independent Palestinian state more than 40 years ago. If history tells us anything, it is that the Intifada can never be suppressed. Restoring order, which is the euphemism used to describe the Likud's policy of beating, torturing, and shooting the Palestinians, is a hopeless effort. Israel's military leadership, except Ariel Sharon, have all declared that a military solution to the Intifada is impossible. Restoring order, of course, was what the German army of occupation was trying to do as it hunted down, tortured and killed the members of the Restoring Order, is what the French were trying to do in Algeria and Vietnam, it's what the British were trying to do in Palestine when they captured and shot Jewish terrorists, it's what the Russians were trying to do in Afghanistan, it's what King George III was trying to do when he sent his redcoats to Boston to restore order after a disorderly tea party in Boston. The threat from religious fanatics. Most major events that have shaped the world's history have been unanticipated, and ones over which governments have had little control. At this writing, the Warsaw Pact is suddenly in a state of disintegration. In 1914, during one of the most stable periods of European history, one homemade bomb, thrown by a Serbian political fanatic at Sarajevo, exploded into World War I, ultimately costing the lives of 25 million people, and changing the world for all time. A little more than 10 years ago, a plot by Jewish religious fanatics to blow up the Muslim sacred shrine Dome of the Rock almost succeeded. If it had, Huckabee says, it could easily have provoked a jihad against Israel by perhaps 40 Muslim nations from Mauritania to Indonesia. This is what the Jewish fanatics hoped would happen, so that it would stop the Sinai and four peace deal between Egypt and Israel. The plotters were captured, but there are still hundreds of thousands of Orthodox zealots who still consider the Dome of the Rock, which sits conspicuously in the middle of Jerusalem, as an abomination that must be wiped out. The Jerusalem Post of October 18, 1989, reported on the following incident entitled Group Lays Cornerstone of Third Temple, led by a Kohen in priestly robes, and equipped with special vessels for the temple ritual, two ram's horns, a clarinet and an accordion. Members of the faithful of the Temple Mount marched last week from the Western Wall to the Pool of Siloam to consecrate what they have designed as a cornerstone of the Third Temple. An outraged Mayor Teddy Karlik described the FTM as dwarfs walking in the footsteps of Shabtai Zvi, reference to the false messiah of the 17th century. Karlik said he hoped the group would not bring catastrophe to the Jewish people as other false messiahs had done, and added that, although few Jews considered the acts of the FTM important, many Arabs regarded them in a different light. Emphasis supplied, one rabbi is quoted as calling them dangerous lunatics. The following is taken from an editorial in the same edition of the Post entitled Engineers of Armageddon. Acting in the exercise of its claim of sovereign right to all Jerusalem, the government left the administration of the Temple Mount to the Muslim authorities. The government's policy has not, however, been uniformly endorsed by the citizenry. To the messianic wing of Israeli ultranationalism, the status quo on the Temple Mount has been an insufferable offense calling for quick remedy. The quickest remedy yet has been offered by the group that sought to blow up the Dome of the Rock a decade ago. The ensuing Armageddon was expected by its engineers to have the particularly beneficial result to killing the then mooted Land for Peace deal between Israel and Egypt over Sinai. What that now extinct underground group tried to secure by violent clandestine means, the Temple Mount faithful, an offshoot of the Greater Israel Movement, has been hoping to achieve through public yesterday, the second day of Hoy Hamod Sukkot. Their leader, Gershon Salomon, laid what he described as a cornerstone of the Third Temple, at a site about a mile away from the Western Wall. That was not quite the ground he had originally had in mind. But a fact had, as it were, been established which, by merely helping fan the Arab riot at the old city's Herod's Gate, showed its effectiveness. So much for the Temple Mount faithful. The group is smallish and can easily be dismissed as inconsequential. But it is not. If, to ordinary Jews, the group's political mangling of religion is merely an abomination, to ordinary Muslims its actions are a serious provocation. Unless it puts these unfunny oddballs in their places, the government will have to bear responsibility for their words and deeds asterisk, emphasis supplied, if the Muslims consider it a serious provocation, and if, by chance, it starts a chain reaction among the fanatics on both sides, which escalates into Armageddon. How does the Israeli government bear the responsibility as suggested in the editorial? Did anyone care who bore the responsibility for the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand? The obligation is not to fix the responsibility for Armageddon, if it comes, but to stop it from coming. Yet every day, hundreds of Jews and Muslim fanatics and hundreds of thousands of fearful hate-filled people are thrown together in this seething cauldron, and see no way out. On any morning we may awake to see a headline that removes the Middle East crisis from anyone's control. The question remains as to how the proposed peace plan would be received by the principal parties in interest. There is, naturally, no way of predicting with absolute certainty how anyone, or any nation would react to the plan as proposed. However, it is perfectly possible, in fact highly probable, that the response of most of the principal parties in interest, can be ascertained in advance, based upon positions previously taken, and public statements made. It is, of course, possible that previous publicly stated attitudes and expressions of views by a party in interest may not be an accurate reflection of a party's true position on the issues which are addressed in the plan. In such cases, the proposed plan would at least serve a valuable purpose in exposing heretofore concealed attitudes, and disguised in the following are what, it is assumed, would be the positions of the respective parties in interest with regard to the proposed plan. The US, as previously indicated, would necessarily have to approve of the plan and act as sponsor and coordinator in its implementation. The plan should receive strong support from the US for the following one. The US, under President Truman, was the principal sponsor and advocate for the partition resolution passed by the United Nations in 1947, which calls for the establishment of two independent sovereign states in Palestine, one Jewish and the other Palestinian too. The US has consistently supported United Nations Resolutions 242 and 338, which call for Israel to return the occupied lands on the West Bank and Gaza to the Palestinians, and also calls for a just settlement 3. It would immediately remove the concern that Israel might be attacked, defeated, and destroyed if war should break out in the Middle for. It would reduce the enmities and hostile attitudes in the Middle East growing out of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which often forces the US to choose between friendly Arab states, our European allies, and a large majority of the Israeli people should welcome the plan. Public opinion polls have shown that all segments of Israeli society, with the exception of the religious extremists and nationalists, have strongly expressed a desire for peace with security. Retaining the occupied lands except for defensive purposes is not important to most Israelis. Since under the proposed plan defensive borders are irrelevant, this concern is eliminated. Robert Maxwell confirms that the principal concern of Israelis is security. David Shipler, in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book quoted earlier, the biblical arguments for holding the West Bank excite very few outside the ranks of the militant movement of settlers, most Israeli reluctant. Tends to relinquish the occupied territory rests on worries about security. A large majority of the Israeli people have always been willing to trade land for peace. Their concern has been that they might find themselves the proposed plan offers Israel assured peace and security. Furthermore, the plan should afford great relief to the Israeli people, who would no longer need to be preoccupied with such futile debate as to under a mutual defense treaty with the US. Such useless speculation is no more relevant than a debate in West Germany after the NATO pact, as the same is true of the mutual defense pact with South Korea. The South Koreans did not have to convince themselves that North Korea or China could be trusted, they trusted the United States. It was assumed that the North Koreans and the Chinese could not be trusted, which, of course, is the reason for the mutual defense treaty. While we believe, as stated earlier, that if Arafat can succeed In having a Palestinian state recognized, both Arafat and the PLO can be trusted to act in their own best interest.